This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
This is the podcast making public transit taking kiss stealing wheeling dealing son of a gun Tim the Nerd welcoming you for the 350th time to Friends Talking Nerdy. The part of the Deluxe Edition Network. Head to deluxeeditionnetwork.com to find out about all of the lovely shows on the den. But with the shock voice next to me, we have the most electrifying professor in podcasting today, Professor Aubrey.
Hello, Tim. That's very exciting about this being the 350th episode.
Yes, I. We have, as podcasters, strived to make lives easier for us long term with the podcasting, and the best way to do that is to have a bank of shows. Pre-recorded shows that can go. I mean, it's great if you can find people to record each and every week, but life happens. So with us going ahead and, you know, recording a number of episodes that we have in the bank, I did the responsible thing also by making sure they were already edited and uploaded so that there's a lot less for me to do.
And to do on time pressure.
Yeah, too, because you don't want a situation to where, and this has happened before, you remember, it's like, oh, wait, it's Sunday, 10 o'clock, I gotta upload a show,
That I don't have.
Or
even if you have it, you use, like, that last minute thing.
It's the last minute thing, yeah, and that's not responsible. But, in taking care of the editing for the past couple of weeks, I came to realize this episode here is going to be number 350.
Wow, that's so great. I remember the first 100.
Yeah, you are the only person to stay through the double digit era of the show.
Really?
So there is that.
What was my first number?
Let's find out. You debuted in episode 87.
Wow.
As we said, too, that was the second date that we had.
Yeah, second date. You made me be on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a unique cat. Let's say that, folks.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a good second date for you because, you know, you're really at home podcasting.
Yeah, it's one of those things I've always been good at, not necessarily the podcast or anything like that, but people that know me now would really be shocked that I was a theater major. Mm-hmm. And have actually been in a couple of plays. It is weird being able to become someone else and be comfortable with that, because even last year when I did The Haunt with the Reverend Tracy, I became that character, and I ended up throwing my voice out, as you all can hear in the archives, but I was able to legitimately scare some people by, you know, laughing like a maniac, and people that know me personally would be like, you did that? The fuck?
Yeah.
So there is that.
Yeah, there is that.
But 350 episodes, quite the achievement. And I think the important thing for me in terms of celebrating is acknowledge it, pat ourselves on the back, and then move on with business.
Oh, for sure. Like, we've hit so many milestones so far.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, it's like, at which point does each episode become, this is our 467th episode? Yeah, woo!
Right, like, maybe let's not talk about it until 500.
I would be happy for 400. I mean, how about the big numbers? Like, you know,
every 50?
Yeah, no, once we get to 400, every 100 after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, makes a lot of
sense. And then once we get to 1,000, every 500 after that.
No, at that point, I mean, it would be every year after that. I mean, we get to that point, then it's just like, we did it.
Yeah, just stop.
Well, not, yeah, no. I'm going to keep doing this, folks. I ain't going anywhere. This is a bizarre show, I know, people. But damn it, it's become my life, and I love it.
Yay! I'm glad that you love your life.
All right, speaking of that, like any job, there are ups and downs. But one thing during the time that I've known you, and this is a great segue, coincidentally, in the great time that I've known you, you have shown a lot of passion when it comes to your job as a professor at a community college.
Sure, yeah. Yes. It's a very important part of my identity, I think.
Indeed, very much so. I mean, obviously, with the professor label that we have on here, but every aspect of your life is, in a good, positive way, is focused on doing the best possible job that you can. You know, there are peaks and valleys with that too, but you know what I mean. But it's been a passion I've admired and respected.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. And I know this, again, a segue here, folks. We came across a wonderful article on Psychology Today. This is not going to be the main event. We're going to be talking about this rather broadly, but we will still have a link for it in the show description. But you read it, and you were especially, I don't know, touched is the right word, but you were like, this gets it. This gets it.
Yeah. So this article is called The Four Benefits of Attending a Community College. And as a community college instructor, I really believe in the mission of community colleges, which is to provide accessible education. You know, we do that through making our programs as accessible to as many people as possible in a variety of ways. And this article really kind of captures, I think, the things that community colleges do really well. And it also talks about downsides to go into community college. And I think maybe there are some more downsides that they didn't mention that we could also talk about. But I just wanted to talk about these four benefits. And the first benefit is affordability. This is huge. And a lot of people who are coming out of high school do not realize how huge it is. They're potentially borrowing lots of money that will compound and compound and compound for their lifetimes, and we don't have a good solution to that right now in this country. So the higher education has increased in price faster than the rate of inflation, faster than the cost of living. So wages haven't kept up with the ability to pay for that. Like, people actually used to be able to work their way through law school, for example, which some people still do that somehow, who go to night programs or part-time programs, but it's hard to imagine that's possible. But community colleges have typically been pitched at underrepresented people, people who weren't accessing college. To do that, it had to be cheaper, and there had to be access to funds for people to be able to go to school, and not only that, but funds for people to be supported in different various ways while they're going to school.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing, and this is what I try to teach my kids in terms of college, is why not take advantage of community college to start with to get the core stuff out of the way at a much cheaper cost. You may find during the college experience that maybe it's not for you, and if that's the case, it's community college prices. It's a decent amount, but it's not,
it's not
like
nothing.
It's not like going to Harvard.
Yeah.
In terms of cost.
Right. And even in, you know, comparison to 4-year university, state universities, which are also pretty affordable in most states, it's double easily what the community colleges in Oregon charge. So your point about getting things out of the way, getting requirements out of the way, community college is a great one in terms of affordability. But you mentioned something else that's related, because you said, you know, maybe you go to community college and you realize that college is not for you. And at a community college, for example, at the community college where I work, we have over 100 different degrees and certificate programs. That's a really wide diversity of programs at the two-year college level. So it's a bunch of opportunities in career and technical education that might appeal.
Oh, and to be clear, I totally understand that having an associate's degree is better than having a diploma. You know, it's just some people, what I'm referring to are the people that, you know, are specifically going for like at most a 2-year program and coming out with that AA at the end. Or the certificate, like you mentioned, your place of employment has plenty of things where, you know, for like 6 months or a year. Take it and you take that course, and then at the end you get a certificate and more than likely a decent job waiting for you somewhere.
Well, that's the idea behind career education. But you know, when I think about 4-year universities and what happens to people who don't do well, they don't get any sort of like a transition, right? It's like, oh, I just am not going to register classes. Nobody cares. I'm not connected to anybody here. I've been here for a semester, so I'm just going to walk away. And that means I'm not cut out for college. When that's not at all what it means. And I hope that people will continue to seek alternatives, because there are lots of ways that you can learn how to do things. And it doesn't have to be a 4-year university. So, anyhow,
shout out to you.
I think that that the transfer and career opportunities at a community college are just so much more rich than what's available at a university, because they're just trying to do different things.
Agreed.
The other thing that community colleges allow people to do is to take a wide variety of classes. Because of the more affordable price of community college, it's possible to take credits and not worry so much about them having to be required credits. So you could actually explore through some electives, like maybe you think you might be into studio art. You're going to have to take some studio art classes to figure that out.
That reminds me of when I first went to college in my 20s and ended up in a jazz dance class.
Nice.
That was fun.
Did you enjoy it?
I really did. And I mean, it was a great teacher and great supportive students as well. I mean, it was like the reverse of the time I signed up for a beginner soccer class, only to find out that like the rest of the class were soccer players getting an easy A. You know,
yeah.
But in this case, like there was one woman that I, you know, was a fellow student of mine that she was actually a local dancer in town. And there was like one time I was kind of early to class and she was the first there and she was doing a routine of her own in the dance studio. And, you know, it was like fucking awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
It's because it's more affordable, you can take, you don't have to worry about the credit, wasting credits or paying for credits you don't need. And so you can sort of explore more different types of things you might want to do. And then in that way, too, you can get more individualized attention at a community college, which seems counterintuitive. Like, it seems like if you're paying less for it, it should be of a lower quality. But in fact, community colleges have very small classes compared to universities. Most classes at the school I teach at have about 25 students in them. When I was at university, my psychology class had 300 people in it. My astronomy class had 600 people in it.
And think of like elementary school teachers. They say that, you know, having 30 students is hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having smaller than that means obviously you as a professor have more time to be able to be, you know, there for the students in person, you know, to be able to help them with their issues within reason, of course. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So that's another big benefit. Then it says disadvantages, and it says there's certain drawbacks include the inability to do research for four full years as a student at a university. So if you're really into lab science and you want to go somewhere, or you're really into some kind of quantitative or qualitative research of any sort, and you know that's what you want to do, then yeah, maybe a community college is not. But like in your freshman year, you usually don't get like bench lab classes. Like you have to take the basic courses.
And wouldn't someone that was already a genius in high school with that stuff be headhunted by a university that would let them do this as well? I mean, it's one of those things that maybe, yeah, it is a drawback, but for a very specific group of people.
Right.
Yeah.
But others include few on-campus housing options, and at our place, there are none. Lack of competitive sports. That's not necessarily true. There's a whole junior college circuit of schools that feed into universities for athletes, student athletes who cannot get into a university would like to have them come play sports. So they have to go to community college and show that they can do well in college before a Division A school or Division II or whatever it is.
Yeah.
A big school is gonna admit them.
Oh, yeah. And I think NFL quarterback, legendary NFL quarterback Kurt Warner started off at a community college, went to a regular college, did some time in the Arena Football League and all that before he got a chance to be in the NFL. And you know, if anybody listening to this says, hey, Kurt Warner didn't do that, somebody did, you know. There are plenty of community colleges out there with it. But I would say more than likely they may be referring to like maybe smaller towns that have a community college, but maybe in terms of geography and just money, unfortunately, they don't have the resources to necessarily do that. But then again, that doesn't even make sense because look at the big universities. They get most of their money from like football, mm-hmm. you know, sports, and all the merchandise they sell too. So having a sports team would just make sense financially.
Yeah. Older facilities, that may be true. Lack of competitive sports. I already said that. Fewer educational resources. I don't know about that. And fewer networking opportunities as compared to the availability at many four-year schools. Further, social gatherings, events, and interactions are usually less abundant on community college campuses. All of those things are true. And I couldn't emphasize the social gatherings, events, and interactions being less abundant. Like one of the huge things, particularly about being a freshman and even a sophomore in college, was learning to be social with people. And going to mixers, parties, and events, and speakers, and getting involved with programming on campus, and like being involved in student government, and sort of all of those things.
So a class I would have failed.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's important stuff, and I think that you don't get that so much in a community college. Like community college, the students aren't there for that long. A lot of students are dropping in and taking a few classes. So you don't have like a common set of people that are in your same class.
Yeah.
Also, people aren't ever there for 4 years, meaning they can't create traditions or support traditions for longer than a year, right? Because they're there for a year, they figure something out, and they're like, oh, I want to do this. And then they try to do it for a year, and then they're gone. And nobody else cares, and so it doesn't get done again.
I mean, maybe things would be different if there were living, you know, more variety in terms of living options on campus for a community college, if they had that, because then again, you have people living together in one situation, they have that bond, and I guess that's where social events and stuff can go, but I don't think community college necessarily needs that. It's a different beast altogether. I mean, it's like, they're doing the same thing in terms of teaching, but just in a different way compared to a standard four-year college.
Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of like the express way.
It's just a different thing. And, you know, when I went to a big four-year university state school, and along my path, I went to a community college, and community college was way harder than that big four-year university in terms of being able to make good grades. Like, at the big four-year university, you did not have to go to class. You just study, learn the material, take the test, get your grade. And for somebody who reads really quickly, is very good at taking tests, like, that's pretty easy. Community college, they expect you to show up every day, and they give you points for it. They expect you to be awake and listening to them and asking questions and doing homework every night and turning that homework in, etc.
Well, fuck.
It was a rude awakening, let me tell you.
Anyway, Well, like we mentioned, the link to this article is going to be in the show description. Psychology Today has been a great resource for us, as we said many times before, and we'll say many times again. You know, it being at the end that it does have links to other references to back up their work that I'm sure are probably offering a little more in-depthness than what this particular article could do. Again, can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
I'm looking at the names of these articles, though, and I'm like, what? What? Here's one. The Community College Effect Revisited, The Importance of Attending to Heterogeneity and Complex Counterfactuals.
From Sociological Science, Their Swimsuit Issue.
Yes. Sociological Science.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I love Psychology Today because it takes stuff like that and it makes it accessible.
Indeed, indeed. Couple for the drinking game, folks. 350th time we've done that. Go back and find all my vocal quirks, folks. All right, we are going to give you a quick update based on a story we talked about last week with Bo Duke coming out against Beyonce's new country album. Update's going to be short here because what I really want to urge people to do is to read this article. It's from The Guardian. It's written by noted country artist Rhiannon Giddens, who actually was one of the musicians on the Beyonce album.
Nice.
The article in question, Black Artistry is Woven into the Fabric of Country Music. It Belongs to Everyone. This article is beautifully written. It gives a direct response to what John Schneider did without, you know, being extremely hyperbolic. It didn't have to be because it made every single point that I very, very briefly mentioned last week, that the history of country music is not white and southern. It's everybody's. And it has a rich history of African-American involvement from the earliest days.
Yeah. And throughout, not just the earliest days, but like up into now, right? Like
agreed.
Charlie Pride in the 70s.
Darius Rucker now, the former lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish, is now a country artist.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard his new stuff, and obviously I've heard Hootie and the Blowfish, who in the 90s hadn't, and not much difference. that's my two cents, but, you know, he's got a career. Good for him. Anyway.
Good for him.
Yeah, like I said, folks, I want to urge everybody to read this article. Like, you know, it is a direct response to the ignorance that came from John Schneider, but it is well fucking written.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful retort.
It is.
A beautiful retort.
It's very well written, and it's very well researched.
Exactly. By one hell of a talented musician. All right, but I did want to go into story time.
Awesome. Let's go into story time.
Yes. February 14th of 2024 was the 25th anniversary of the time that I went to see Black Sabbath.
Wow.
Yes.
On Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, I mean, I went with my friend Chris, so, you know, hetero life mate.
Probably even if you'd had a girlfriend, it probably would have been better for you to go with Chris.
I will have you know, there is nothing hotter than a metal chick, okay?
So, well, not for a metal guy.
Well, there you go.
I'm sure. Like, how many metal chicks are there?
A decent amount.
Really?
They're out there.
Aren't they? You don't see them in Portland.
Portland's different. I mean, this is like a Dave Matthews town here.
No, it is like a bro town.
Yeah.
It's like a rock climbing bro town.
Yeah, where's my chai tea, man? Anyway, so this is 99. The internet is still newish, but with personal computers being what they are going to more and more people's homes. But we didn't have your iPhones, we didn't have your iPads. GPS devices were around, but rather expensive. So once I found out Black Sabbath was going to be coming to the Palace of Auburn Hills in Detroit, Michigan, I had to go. But this is me we're talking about here, who gets nervous about absolutely everything. I didn't want to drive on the highway. Mm-hmm. So my friend Chris was like, we got to go. And I was like, yeah, I get it. So I didn't have the internet. So what I had to do is I had to go to the library, go to the map room, and find maps that would find me a way to get to Detroit without getting on the highway. And I found it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It turned out Fulton Street in Grand Rapids was the old state highway.
Oh.
And the beauty of it was that I could take a straight line all the way to Flint, take a right on a specific road in Flint, and then travel down to where I needed to go.
Oh, nice.
Which we did, but it was one of the most nerve-wracking times of my life. I mean, just being in the car, like, I don't even know if I had insurance at the time. Whoops. You know, just driving, like, I don't want to get caught. I'm driving. You know? Oh, well, I don't want a flat tire and have rural Michigan people after me. I don't know. I'm too precious anyway.
You come from rural Michigan people.
Yeah, that's why I want to get away from rural Michigan people. But anyway, we're driving. So, got to Flint successfully, took that right, drove on down, and then the first speed bump happens. My friend Chris, because I bought the tickets, Chris bought a night at a Holiday Inn for us to stay at. So what I did is I thought I was following the map, and I went down a road. And I went down, and then I couldn't find this particular road that we were supposed to turn off on to get to the Holiday Inn. And I was starting to freak out really bad until we ended up finding our way, sort of, and then got to the Holiday Inn. But that caused us to be late because the opening act for Black Sabbath was Pantera, but there was a band that played before them. Yeah. I don't remember who. I didn't care who. So no tears were shed there. But we ended up driving from the hotel, going to the palace. But then we missed the turnoff on the palace, which had to see me get back onto the highway to drive back to where I'd first started. But that did allow me to drive past the Pontiac Silverdome, where WrestleMania 3 was held. So that was awesome to see.
Okay.
But find our way to the Palace of Auburn Hills, get inside, and we got into our seats just as Pantera hit the stage.
Nice.
Yes, and man, did that pit start fast, and it was huge. I would have to say about the first 10 rows was the pit. And what we're talking about here, for people that don't know metal or don't know what a pit is, it's a mosh pit where just a bunch of hyped up white guys are jumping around, slapping each other and, hitting each other and all that. And it's called dancing.
Yeah,
I was glad.
It's called moshing.
Mosh pit, yeah. I was glad I was in the cheap seats in the back.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see Pantera. I mean, like, unfortunately, we're never going to be able to see the original lineup anymore because in the early 2000s, the lead guitarist, Dimebag Darrell, was tragically murdered.
Oh, my God.
On stage, yeah, because Pantera broke up in the early 2000s and a fan was so upset by it that killed him on stage.
Whoa.
Yeah, sad news there. But then around 5 or 6 years ago, within that time frame, maybe sooner, his brother, who was the drummer of the band, Vinnie Paul, ended up passing away as well. So the original lead singer and bassist are now going on tour with a couple of replacements. And the tour is just more of a greatest hits type of tour. So that's why people are cool with the Pantera name being used right now. But anyway, seeing the original lineup, seeing, for my money, one of the greatest metal guitar players of all time in Dimebag Darrell do his thing was awesome. But that pit, I'm glad I was where I was at. But then the show started and lights go off, fans are starting to roar, and then all of a sudden you hear the opening of their song Black Sabbath. Lights turn on the stage, smoke fills the stage, and then rising from the bottom of the stage is the band. And Ozzy, man, I got to see him in concert. That was awesome.
Yeah.
One of the greatest frontmen in rock and roll history. Also very understanding of just how theatrics can help with appreciation of the performance. Mm-hmm. Because there was a thing in the 90s to where the artists would just, you know, have their gear up there and play, and there's nothing wrong with that per se, but with the price of tickets as well, does it hurt you to have some fireworks? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta give the people what they want, right? You're supposed to be entertaining, it's supposed to be a show. And even though, I mean, you think about these concerts with mosh pits, and usually in smaller places, it seems like out of place at a big arena like that.
I mean, the Palace would just seat at approximately 20,000.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
so.
Mean, that's a huge venue for a mosh pit. I guess I'm just saying, like, a lot of these things would make more sense in a smaller venue. But, like, at a big venue like that, yeah. Fireworks, yeah, huge Jumbotron, yeah, like all the things.
I mean, the 90s artists, I kind of get where they were coming from too. With the 80s especially, it became more about the show. It became more about the appearance and less about the music. So there needed to be an extreme course correction. But I do think folks that stayed in that direction are boring, to your point. Yeah, you got to entertain. You don't need stadium fireworks in a small club or something like that. You can at that point be the fireworks yourself if you're a good show person.
Yeah
Anyway, one hell of a show. We get out and 20,000 people leaving all at once. We're in the walkway of the Palace of Auburn Hills, and this kid looks like the John Connor's friend in Terminator 2, the red kid with the red hair that was a mullet and like the jean jacket with the sleeves cut off, bumped into me. He's like this skinny little guy, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I mean, there were a whole bunch of people. Everybody was bumping into each other, and then he shoved me. It's like, fuck you, and I shoved him right back, and he fell to the ground. I mean, because I apologized, because I didn't even feel I should have apologized, because it was shoulder to shoulder. Everybody was bumping into each other.
Yeah.
But like a little punk tried to shove me, fuck him.
Yeah, because you were bigger and stronger.
Yeah, I was 190 pounds, damn it.
6'5".
Yeah, 6'5", 190 pounds, you know. Hey, baby, want to go with the string bean? Anyway, so yeah, we get out, we're driving through the lanes they have there at the Palace to get to the main roads. There are bootleg sellers out, and my friend Chris ended up buying a shirt, but I had money. I was like, Chris, get me one. It's like, oh, he was like, oh, it's too late, man. So I didn't get a bootleg shirt.
Aww.
Yeah, but we got back to the hotel, but I missed the road again.
So you had to go around.
Yeah, we had to go around. But the funny thing is, the next day, woke up, drive on back, and then found out that there was just one little tiny road we missed that would have gotten us to where we needed to go. Because, like, essentially, it was like a, like, Main Street A took a little veer to the left and then continued on where it... If that makes sense, but even though Main Street A and before the veer ended up becoming another road altogether, it was weird, and I was just glad I got out of there.
Yeah, sounds like it's very weird.
Yeah, but drove all the way back safe, didn't get pulled over, didn't get harassed by the rural Michigan people, you know. What are you doing to my daughters? Come here! Type of deal.
Stay away from their daughters.
Yeah, and then got back in time to go to work that day.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was a gas station job.
Wow, so you got one day off, you went to Detroit, you saw the band, you had a great time, you came back and went to work.
Yep.
Those were the days.
Yep. The 20s, people. Your 20s, embrace them for what they are. You can have a ton of stories by the time you're almost 50 and, you know, waking up sore.
Yeah. Don't have to do anything to become sore.
Yeah.
Just constantly in a state of soreness.
Yeah. Thanks, oldness. Anyway, how about we send it to one of our friends at the Deluxe Edition Network so they can tell our folks about their show?
Sounds great.
All right, sit back, relax, and enjoy this message.
What's up, everybody? I'm Matt, the host of the Beard Laws Podcast, a podcast that has nothing to do with beards. A podcast where we aim to entertain and interact with our live viewers, but our listeners. They're like the quiet person that never talks sitting around the bonfire because the rest of the group is so entertaining, hilarious, wild, and a little bit dumb. So grab a drink, grab a snack, and let Beard Laws and the boys, Toby, Brandon, Logan, Zach, Richie, and our occasional special guest entertain you. We're live on the Beard Laws YouTube Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and for whatever reason, you want to see us and or our beards. Check us out, thebeardlawspodcast.com. We're everywhere.
Hey, Tim, before we get to our main event, would you like a cup of coffee?
Always. I live on that stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. How do I get through the day otherwise? Caffeine, man.
Caffeine is the way. Damn. I agree. You've got to have caffeine in order to make it through the day. That is for sure. So I have this new coffee I would love for you to try because I absolutely adore it. And you know I have really good tasting coffee.
You most definitely do, folks.
Yeah, so I have this new coffee from Coffee Brothers Coffee, Coffee Bros, and they are a small roaster in New York City that's run by two brothers, which is why they call themselves Coffee Bro.
Imagine that!
I know, right? Yeah. And they have this really great website that sells coffee that they make there in New York City, or they roast there. Sorry, they don't make it there. Obviously, they grow it in places where coffee grows.
Yeah, I don't think the South Bronx is a good place for coffee.
No.
In terms of growing coffee.
No, I think you have to be much closer to the equator.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, here, give it a try. What do you think?
Nom, 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 nom. So good, folks. So good. This is something I recommend we all try.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's an award-winning coffee. And it's got really great blends, espresso roasts, and single origin coffees, which are all small batch roasted, you guys, in New York City. And we're in Portland, as you know, the home of amazing coffee. But for my coffee at home, I'm going to go for Coffee Bros.
And a reason I would go to Coffee Bros myself is because I love a good discount.
Oh my God, yes you do, Mr. Frugal.
Yes, if you go to their website, which you can go to our show description, and it will have a link there that will take you directly to their site, coffeebros.com. If you purchase some coffee from their website, and when it prompts you to put in the promo code, you put in FTN10, you're going to save 10% off of your order.
Wow, that's awesome.
It definitely is.
I hope everybody takes advantage of this wonderful opportunity to get 10% off this fabulous coffee.
I hope so too. Again, people, coffeebros.com. You can find a link in our show description. And at checkout, in the promo code area, put in FTN10. Let's drink some coffee, baby.
Okay.
All right, we have a special main event this week. It is going to be another watch-along, but for the first time in show history, it will not be a watch-along of a professional wrestling event.
No, it will not be.
All right, it is going to be something special. Professor Aubrey, tell the folks at home what we are doing.
Well, I thought, since Tim usually has us watch a wrestling thing to watch along to, because my, I guess, responses to wrestling are just so cute and funny.
I like it.
I thought I would show Tim something I like that is about as opposite of wrestling for entertainment as it could possibly be. This very sweet, small English sitcom about people who use metal detectors to find antiquities.
Ah, sounds sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just their lives and families and things that happen to them. And it's really good.
What is the name of that show?
The name of the show is Detectorists.
How did you come across it?
Well, I've always liked Mackenzie Crook and Toby. I can't remember Toby's last name, but the actor who's in this with Mackenzie Crook.
I'll find it here.
So, I don't know exactly, like, I think I read something about it, and so then I looked it up and watched an episode of it, and I was immediately hooked and binged the whole thing.
Toby Jones.
Toby Jones has played some interesting characters. He's kind of a character actor.
Yeah, he's come across my radar for his work in science fiction and superhero films. Mm-hmm. He was one of the many, many, many legendary British actors and actresses who have played a role on Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
He is also Arnim Zola in the Captain America movies.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's in the MCU.
That is so cool. I had no idea.
Yes, another reason to watch.
Okay.
Yes, so...
So how's this going to work?
Well, folks, we are watching this on YouTube. Whether you have a YouTube premium subscription like we do or not is irrelevant. YouTube offers free seasons of television shows. And the first two seasons of The Detectorist are available on YouTube to watch. If you do not have YouTube premium, there will be commercials that will be dropped in. And being that this is a British show, I can only assume that how bad the commercial placement will be. It will probably pop up in the middle of a very important scene for all I know, but at least it's free, right? I mean, you'll be able to pick right back up where you left off after the commercials if you can get the 5-second break.
Yeah. So we are going to turn it on and start watching it, and then we're going to comment as we watch it, right? That's the deal.
Yes, kind of like we do with the watch-alongs as well. This is now the watch-along as the method to our madness. Now, when we are going to do a watch-along, is that we are going to record it live to tape, but what you are going to hear at home is going to be slightly edited, so you don't have to hear some like pauses or lots of vocal quirks if they come at a particular time. You know, makes it easier listening.
Yeah.
But the links to the show itself will also be in the show description, because I think with the prices of subscription services being what they are these days, it's important to know that there is a lot of good quality free stuff out there. If you're willing to just maybe, if you don't have the money for a premium service, to just sit through a commercial or two, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using YouTube for a really long time, and I just dealt with the commercials because the content was so good for what I needed. And you couldn't find that content anywhere else, like a lot of DIY content, etc. Having premium is awesome because we don't have the commercials, but like I never stopped using YouTube because there were commercials.
Oh yeah, and when the day comes that we don't subscribe to premium anymore, we're still going to use YouTube, and it's great to know you have free stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at one point, I mean, because we were at one point talking about that movie Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore from Martin Scorsese that inspired the sitcom Alice, which always blew my mind.
Right.
And with Kris Kristofferson in that movie, it was on YouTube for a while.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the movies they offer for free. So, all right, like we do with the watch along, we're watching season 1, episode 1 of The Detectorist. We are at the 4-second mark right now. Like I said, with our editing, if you follow along, it our episode, our talk will be a lot shorter than the what we see here, but that's only to make it the best possible presentation we can give. If you've heard our 2018 Royal Rumble episode, you get it.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you want to press play?
I will press play. Okay. 2, 3, 2, 1, play.
All right. We are opening up to a quiet meadow. Birds chirping. We have flowers. We have a cornfield, maybe. And there's beeping.
Yes. So, there's Toby Jones, detectorist. He's got his metal detector out there in the farmer's field. The cinematography here is just absolutely gorgeous, capturing that afternoon sunshine.
It definitely does have that going for it in terms, like you mentioned, of the cinematography here, because even though if we were there in person, it would probably look a lot more plain. The greens really stick out, the brown, even the brown is vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Toby Jones is, like you mentioned, one of those character actors that could read a phone book in an entertaining way.
Yeah.
And I know that's an old cliche, but there are actors and actresses who can do that.
Yeah, and he's one of them. Mackenzie Crook is, too, really.
Mm-hmm.
A good character actor.
What type of stuff has he been in?
He was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh.
It's that sort of goofy. It was him and another guy who were like always fucking things up.
So he's like the English Danny Trejo, the guy with a very specific look that gets some very specific roles.
Yeah.
Okay. And what are the character names? Toby Jones.
Toby's name in this is... I can't even remember. I don't remember either of their names.
I'll bring up the Wikipedia page here, but we are now switching to a scene here. It looks like they are done for the day, or at least taking a break, and they're having a conversation.
Yeah, they're just drinking some coffee under a beautiful tree. Okay, Mackenzie's name is Andy, and Toby's name is Lance Stater. He's a forklift truck driver for a vegetable wholesaler and an amateur musician.
Lance, what a name.
Mm-hmm. Lance and Andy.
Hello, I'm Lance, you know. You can imagine, yeah, Lance Steele.
And here, what they've just said is their friend's going to give a talk about buttons. So they're very into finding antiquities with their detectors. And so they're just talking about their friend giving a talk on buttons, and they're like, yeah, there's no way we're going to that. So keep that in mind as the action progresses.
Is this one of those deals to where by the end of the episode they're in the audience listening to the speech about buttons? Or is that going to spoil things?
I'm not going to spoil it.
Okay. She was a hippie, you know, into crystals and all that shit.
Used to wear vanilla perfume.
Oh, yeah.
Stunk like Play-Doh.
Anyway, we got another character coming right now. A young lady.
And she saunters up to these two older, geekier guys.
What is the relationship between Toby and Mackenzie's character?
They're best friends. So they just hang out with each other, mostly metal detecting, but during the course of that, they, you know, share everything with each other.
Yeah, was it established that they met at, like, a metal detector club or something like that, or did they know each other from school?
No, it's unclear how they met. It does seem like they've known each other for a really long time.
Yeah, and also, too, though, I would say by the clothing selection between Toby and Mackenzie, though, it could be interpreted that maybe they did meet at a club, because Mackenzie's character is dressed a little more like me, you know, compared to Toby's, a little more upscale-ish, I guess, unless I'm reading into that.
No, maybe that's true. I don't know.
Yeah, which doesn't mean that they can't have a deep, close friendship, by the way. Look at those earphones. I never liked the earphones like that. The ones that kind of clip over your ears, but hung around the back of your neck.
I hate earphones, all kinds. Yeah. I mean, they're like a necessary evil for me.
Yeah, the AirPods are okay. I got a pair of Beats, the Beats version of AirPods, even though Apple owns that company. And I love the noise cancellation.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Because when people are like, can I get some change? And I can legitimately not hear them.
All right, so now Sophie is asking, can I come see the button talk?
Ah.
They told her about the button talk, and she was like, oh, you mind if I come around? And they're like, no, of course. And so let's see what's going to happen now.
Well, let me guess, Andy has a bit of a crush.
Well, do you think they want to go to the thing on buttons now that they were making fun of before?
Would a guy who has a crush on a girl want to go to something like that? Yes, of course.
Yeah, so now they're like all want to go to the buttons talk that they were just making fun of.
Yeah. All right, Andy looks like, I'm assuming he's arriving at his home here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That is his...
All right, so I did read into it. I mean, I would not have pictured him with a wife, which is, like, I don't have a wife either, but I didn't picture him with one. And
they're not married, but they're partners and live together.
Well, that's good. It's just his clothes were a little more... but I'm seeing him in a different light now in his apartment here, so... But what is her name?
Her name is Maggie. And she's actually the actress... His name, Lucy Benjamin. No, sorry. No. Rachel Sterling, whose mother is also Sterling, and is also in the show, Diana Rigg.
Oh, I saw Diana Rigg in person.
Diana Rigg plays her mother and is actually her mother.
And they were both in Doctor Who as well.
Yeah.
But
everybody's been in Doctor Who.
Yeah. Well, the mid-90s, at DeVos Hall in Grand Rapids, that was the place where, like, the touring Broadway shows would show up, and they had the Sisters Rosenzweig, and Dinah Rigg was the star.
Oh, wow.
So I got to see that live. I got to see a Bond girl in person.
Wow.
Dinah Rigg was the Bond girl in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, probably one of the best James Bond films ever made.
Yeah, and she's a dame.
Yep. And of course, she was famous as Emma Peel from the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
The British Avengers, not the, you know, Avengers Assemble MCU one.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the show here. Oh, he's looking down his shirt.
Right. So just establishing that, like, he's a nice guy and he's hugging his girlfriend and
loving relationship.
Yes. And here comes Lance out of his house.
Well, looks
and
like.
And I love this show because it shows you a small town in England. And when I was in England, I had the privilege of going to somebody's house in a small town that I knew off the internet and hanging out with her. And it was just like this. Like, the town was just like this. Her place was just like that. Like, it's uncanny.
And every shop you go to was started in the 1600s.
Everything was old. Yeah. Yes. So now Andy is, Lance is stopping by this New Age store that is operated by his ex-wife.
Ah, they do look quite incompatible. Like, her, like, she seems like much more of the super extroverted type.
Uh-huh.
Is that her character?
Yeah.
Okay. And he's a little more subdued here, so... Now, is this a sarcastic relationship, or are they friends?
They're friends.
Okay.
They're very sweet. What one thing we found out in the previous scene was that she left him to go with the manager of a Pizza Hut, who we now see walking out of the back room.
Looks like Patrick Warburton. Is he jealous?
Yes.
He wants his wife back?
Well, he's very lonely, and, you know, he's not seeing anybody else.
They don't have Tinder in England. I do like candles myself. Not something I thought I would like growing up, you know.
Do you like candles?
I do like candles. Taking a sniff of the candle and he tosses it in the garbage.
Because he didn't actually need a candle. He was just embarrassed.
Andy has the blue collar job and I totally misread Lance, you know, because I would have thought, you know, he was married. And I would have thought he was a little more well-to-do than he appeared to be. I mean, it looked like he had comparable to, like, what we have here, you know?
Yeah.
Like a condo type of place.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a deck and everything.
Yeah.
And he works a forklift.
Yeah, he's a forklift driver.
I was totally wrong.
You were totally wrong.
Yeah. You asshole!
They're both blue-collar workers. Which I like about any kind of show when it focuses more on real people than on...
Well, that is kind of the good thing about British TV is that they're not afraid to do stuff like this or even to make a character be kind of a jerk at times. I mean, American productions have the bad tendency of making every single cast member be the most beautiful person in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great looking at beautiful people, I guess, but it's just important to have life on the screen sometimes. Not that people are ugly, you know what I mean? But
yeah, no, it's nice to have reality presented at such a time when reality TV is not showing us what is real life.
Mm-hmm.
Now he is collecting vegetables to cook for dinner.
Is this something he could be fired for?
They seem pretty chill.
I mean, those are huge crates.
Yeah, like, I don't think he would do that if he thought he would get fired for it. Like, he could just go to the store and buy that stuff.
Okay. But he is driving a James Bond type of car. Yellow.
Yes, he loves that car.
Does that tie into the storylines at all?
Oh, yeah.
But definitely a slower pace. You can tell that just from watching here. A different type of vibe than what you would get even from an American show attempting to do the same thing here.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because like an American show, if there was an American version of this show, it would be much more fast-paced, even if it was still keeping in line with, you know, the characters having blue-collar jobs or something like that. Because, like, the kitchen looks like a blue-collar type of kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the whole classic thing of, like we talked about with the Ted movie, somebody on $38,000 living in extravagance.
Right.
You know? Or like those movies where people, you know, poor people in New York have these lavish, like, warehouse studio apartments.
Right.
You know, ridiculous stuff. Oh, man, that is way too much stuff in this house. Like, man, like I said, I am the guy with being cool with a TV on top of a cardboard box. Like, look at all those bookshelves with stuff.
Yeah, is that you don't like that?
Yeah, a little too much, I guess, but now they are looking at a computer here. And I am, based on captioning here, it looks like that they are planning their next adventure with metal detectors.
Well, they're talking about something called field marks, where when it is a drought in the summer, it will change the coloring of the ground where there are archaeological features underneath. And so you can see from aerial photos circles and things that indicate there were roundhouses. And then that's where you would go archaeologically dig to find them. What he's talking about and saying that that's what he's doing and look at these features, but then Andy is saying, no, you know what? That actually spells Google. That's a Google Earth watermark. Because it's G-O-O.
Oh, could anybody, I don't know, I guess if you're not really looking for it, it's one of those where are my glasses moments and they're on your head.
Yeah.
Now, are they looking for that big score or, yes. Okay.
They definitely want to be rich and this is what they're doing to get rich.
You mean they don't have a podcast?
No podcast or anything. They're looking for a Saxon hoard.
So if Indiana Jones were set in England in a rural town and didn't have the special effects budget.
And there was no conflict.
Yeah.
It would be this show.
Well, I mean, conflict is inherent in any story. I mean, is the conflict, I'm assuming, is just more relationship-wise, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all emotional.
Mm-hmm. There'll be no explosions, nobody jumping through the air with two guns firing at the same time. Nothing like that.
If
you all could see the look on the professor's face right now. But the talk on the buttons. And we have one person that is quite awake watching.
Next to another person who is asleep.
Yes. Now I'm assuming some of the stuff on the, like the slides that they're watching right there is based on like real stuff found by metal detectors, right?
I bet. I mean, that's probably the easiest way to get stuff like that.
Maybe some of the people are extras too, I don't know.
No, all these people are characters.
Hmm.
The antiquisitors here are introduced, which is a rival club of detectorists. So they're
not the bloody allied atheist runch.
Exactly. The antiquisitors. This is the Danebury Metal Detecting Club.
Ah.
The DMDC.
Danebury?
Danbury.
Oh, Danbury. Oh, the town. Okay. Oh, Sophie just arrived, people.
There she is. They're so excited to see her.
A living, breathing girl. So, who would you say is one of your favorite characters on the show?
His wife. So, that guy who's talking. His wife is my favorite character on the show.
The guy with the beard and the glasses?
Yeah. Terry Seymour is his name. And his wife's name is Sheila Seymour.
Mm.
They're my favorite ones. Also, I love Russell. They're all really great characters. And when you get to know them, like, you love them all for different reasons. But Sheila and Terry have this really close relationship. Sheila's very in touch with, the other side, the afterworld, and psychicness. She has psychic gifts.
Ah.
And she and Terry spend a lot of time going to dance classes in order to spend time together in their retirement.
Okay. Even though they're divorced?
No, they're not divorced.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Lance.
No.
Oh.
Those two people, Terry and Sheila, they're sitting next to each other. They're married.
Okay. Oh, I thought the woman was Lance's ex-wife.
No.
Okay, that was my mistake. Oh, they can't do Saturday, folks. And I'm assuming they're referring to some special event that's happening on that Saturday.
How are you feeling about it so far?
So far, it looks pretty interesting. I mean, would I say it would be something that I would actively search out? Probably not. The actors involved, definitely aware of at least half of them so far with some of their previous work, and it's a fine group of actors.
Mm-hmm.
And being a British production, too, I mean, being on a smaller plot of land than the United States, they're going to have a smaller group of actors to pick from, and they're not going to be fucking talented as hell. I mean, because, like, I think Toby there is one of many, like, Shakespearean trained, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where they all started, I think, in England. Like, everybody does Shakespeare.
Yeah. It's like reading Mark Twain here, Tim.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, shut up, Tim.
That's not what I'm saying.
No, I know.
I'm just agreeing with you.
I'm playing. But yeah, when he in Doctor Who, Toby played the character called the Dream Doctor that you didn't know if he was there or not, and had tried to make the Doctor choose between what was a fantasy that was going on and what was real life, and if he chose wrong, everybody would die.
Mm.
And pretty simplistic. I'm not trying to say Doctor Who is Citizen Kane or anything like that, but the beauty of having classically trained character actors like that is that they can make the silly stuff dramatic and fun as hell.
Yeah.
Now we have more of the personal connection between Andy and his significant other, his partner, and it looks like they had get together. I'm assuming they had a get together based on the captioning here. A get together plan that he had to back out on.
Yeah, they were planning on going to her sister's house, and he had already scheduled to go metal detecting with Lance the next day, and so backed out of going to her sister's house.
And they're referring to the British show QI.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that. It was pretty fun. And speaking of that, Stephen Fry is now the host of the British version of Jeopardy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They have episodes on YouTube as well. Stephen Fry, the co-host, was the host of QI. I don't think he hosts it anymore. And much like You Bet Your Life, it is a very loosely formatted show that is just there for people like Stephen Fry to do what they do best.
Improvise.
Yeah. And who do we have here?
And this is the farmer. So he owns this farm where they want to detect her, looking for the Great Saxon Horde. And he's a little bit wacky. You can tell by looking at him. He's like a classical sort of wacky British guy.
With Doc Brown type of hair.
Yes.
Is he a recurring character, or is this the only time I see him?
No, he's on it the whole time. And he's another hilarious, wonderful character. He's got these dogs that don't exist.
Are they coming out now?
Yeah, he's yelling at him right now. He's like, get him off the sofa. Just get him off the sofa. They shouldn't even be on the furniture. And there's nobody there.
There are sadly people that do that, though.
Yeah.
Poor things. I mean, especially living in a rural place, if you're older and you're the only human, you know, within a local region, and pets are going to be life-saving to you, and if they pass, man. And then what did he stir the tea with? Something in his pocket.
It was like a garden trowel.
So has the show kind of inspired you to maybe try metal detecting at least once?
Well, I did. You know, I was interested in trying it when I first watched the show. I'm less so now, I guess. Like, the idea of doing it in the beautiful British countryside is one thing.
Doing it in Portland.
It's just like,
hey, I found a syringe. It seems like the type of hobby, kind of like podcasting in a way, that to really get some success out of it, you got to just keep plugging away and keep plugging away and just hope.
Doing it for the sake of doing it, you know?
Doing it for the sake, yeah. If you're looking to get rich, don't. I mean, it may happen, but...
Right. To me, it's like, but it's just so lovely to walk around with a friend in the beautiful...
Much like podcasting, being able to have that time in the week to be able to talk with a friend, you know?
Yeah.
And they got that permission, folks. They are on the dig. They're both excited. And one thing I'm noticing, too, like, Toby is one of those actors that has a way in his performances to make you think that he's bigger or smaller. and it sounds silly saying that, but, you know, like, if he's, like, a subservient character or something like that in a character that he's playing in a particular movie, I've seen him, you know, appear shorter. But here, like, he looks like maybe 6 feet or so? And, we got some beeping, folks, so they're digging.
What'd he get?
I would have to think, too, with metal detectors, like, they can only go so far. And, like, for the really serious archaeological stuff, it would be further below than what they would be able to detect, if that makes sense. Or maybe...
I think that's not true, though. I think that, depending on where you are, the archaeology is not really that deep in Europe. Like, we're just talking about 400 years ago or something, right?
Yeah. Well, anyway, we have the credits rolling right now. So the first episode is in the books here. You glad you watched it?
I'm glad I made you watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It was pretty good here. Now, for the sake of what we did, we watched it with the captioning on. But even then, the attention was still captivated on what was going on the screen. It's got a lot of great actors in it, too.
It's got a really lot of great actors in it.
Yeah. I mean, for, like, when you mentioned The Detectorist in the past, I thought it was another one of those. What was that archaeology? Time Team. Yeah, because there's a British show called Time Team, I guess, where they do
archaeological stuff. Where they are archaeologists, and they go into different sites, and they're there for 3 days, and they try to find everything about it.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this is not that. But good character stories, like, I miss them. Like, I'm, in a lot of ways, getting really burned out on IP, on already established stuff. I mean, that doesn't mean I'm not going to enjoy a good superhero movie every now and then, folks. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to go cold turkey or anything, but it's kind of boring, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same pitch, you know? It's the same emotional arc in all of those movies.
Yeah, because, like, even if there's a new Ghostbusters movie coming out, and the vibe of that feels like a Marvel movie.
Mm.
And that's sad that a Ghostbusters movie makes me feel that way. But I still have the original. I mean, that's what I don't get about people when they get upset about remakes, you know? It's like... Unless the director of the remake had it in his contract that he could personally take the VHS and DVD copies that people have of the movie and then personally burn and piss on the negatives, just enjoy the old version of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was The Detectorist on YouTube. Check the link in our show description so you can watch it without our delightful commentary here. Did you have anything else to say about The Decemberist before you use your massage... The Detectorist before you use your massage machine.
No, I'm going to use this massage machine just as quickly as possible to help me relax my shoulders, which are quite stressed.
Yes, kind of one of those thumper things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Theragun. Anyway, we thank you all for listening for the most electrifying professor in podcasting today. For the 350th time, we get to say each Monday we'll have something in this podcasting space to entertain your ear holes. Until we meet again, we bid you adieu.
Farewell.
Let's end this. Subscribe to Friends Talking Nerdy
on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify,
or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Goodbye, darling.